Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The more I investigated this issue, the more I found that there are a lot of communities that don't put fluoride in the water, even here in the state of Wisconsin, that it remains a somewhat controversial issue. And over the last 4 years, more and more municipalities have stopped fluoridating their water. We're going to examine the issue this hour of the program. For 65 years, according to the Center for Disease Control, the community water fluoridation program has been a safe and healthy way to effectively prevent tooth decay. There is some concern about whether or not there needs to be an adjustment to the recommendation for the optimal fluoride level in drinking water to prevent tooth decay. There's a big battle, I guess you could call it, or maybe it's a polite discussion going on in New Jersey, where most residents in that state do not have fluoridated water, and the legislature is debating a bill that would require all public water systems to add fluoride. So we thought we would take up the issue this hour. It's been around for a long, long time. We'll have two guests with us during the course of the hour. Dr. Robert Hirsch is past president of the New Jersey Dental Association, past president of the New Jersey Society of Periodontics. Later in the hour, we'll speak with an elected village trustee from Holman, Wisconsin, where there was a debate about fluoridation of water. He is against it. And we'll hear from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Dr. Robert Hirsch, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, should be an interesting conversation. Tell me the history of New Jersey. Why has the water not been fluoridated in New Jersey?
New Jersey has what's called a home rule. That means that each municipality has the opportunity to elect or not to elect any particular public health initiative, for example.
Hmm.
So in the case of water, there can be six communities on one water line. Any one of those communities has the ability to veto that initiative. And so as a consequence of that, it's really become a political matter that is a function of each town being able to weigh in on whether or not it actually has fluoride in the water system.
So it's been a political issue for 65 years?
Well, it has. It has, because this phenomenon of home rule has existed for that long.
Oh, my goodness. That's a long time.
Yeah, it is a long time.
So have the people who are for fluoride in water not made their case very well?
Well, you know, that's obviously it depends on which side of the argument you're standing on. The science, if one looks to, you know, the really strong scientific organizations, CDC, the Center for Disease Control, the World Health Organization, some of the big organizations that deal with cancer research, they have kind of felt that there seems to be no evidence of a deleterious effect of fluoride addition in the water system. Now, there are those who are very vocal and very concerned about the addition of fluoride, and they've made their case to the point where they've frightened enough people, I think, to have actually stopped it in some communities.
Hmm. What do you think of fluoride in the water?
Well, you know, obviously I'm not a scientist per se. I have to kind of go with what the science seems to indicate. In my evidence, in my reading, the science seems to support that fluoride is, one, very effective at minimizing decay. There are studies that have shown that over a period of a lifetime, one would wind up with 70% less decay if one used fluoridated water. Certainly, there's public health issues in connection to that. There's cost issues in connection to that. Children that have less decay have better attendance at school, have better nutrition, have better self-esteem because they don't have these very, very badly decayed teeth. And so there are issues, I think, that would support the addition of fluoride And these issues probably well overweigh the notion of, you know, some of the concerns that those who are against fluoride have.
Mm-hmm. Is there a legitimate debate about how much fluoride should be put in the water that we may be over-fluoridating?
Well, I think there absolutely is a concern that we get the exact proper parts per million. And I think as the years have gone on, if anything, that has been decreased. It started at one part per million as the gold standard, and I think that's been kind of decreased with years to maybe 0.7 parts per million. I think the reason for that is twofold. One is that the dietary intake of people has probably included fluoridated water in some form more than it used to be, and I think that's an issue. And I think also we're becoming much more careful about examining the water systems. You know, almost all water systems have some trace elements of fluoride. And I think that the precision that's available now to determine exactly how much natural fluoride exists has to be weighed and considered before one adds fluoride to the system.
Mm-hmm. Did the dental community weigh in on this years ago when we decided to use fluoride in the water system?
Sure.
And they were in favor of it?
Well, they are. They have been from the very beginning. As soon as the studies, you know, it's been going on since the 40s. I think that once the initial studies started to come out and to show this almost 50% decrease in decay amongst those children that had fluoride in their tooth structures, really, it started to become very interesting to the dental community from the standpoint of a prevention. Prevention is always a stronger therapy than trying to fix that which has already occurred.
Right.
And so I think that even though it may be against their own best interests in one sense, the dental community, the local, state, and a national group, the American Dental Association, has always been in support of fluoridated water.
As I recall, tell me if I'm way off base here, but I think it was the John Birch Society that started this anti-fluoridation movement. They felt that maybe the Russians were going to put fluoride in our drinking system and we're all going to become communists. Or it had a weird beginning, didn't it?
Well, you know, I really don't know much about the early opposition to fluoride. I know that the current opposition has to do with three or four principal concerns from a public health standpoint. One is the dental fluorosis. Dental fluorosis is a pitting or mottling or white patches in the teeth in its mild form. In its more severe form, it can take on a brownish stain on the tooth. So while that's not a public health issue in the sense that it doesn't make the tooth more susceptible to decay, it is an aesthetic issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, and so in those communities where natural fluoridation is very high, they see a much greater incidence of this fluorosis, dental fluorosis. The second issue is the cancer concern. There are those who have suggested that fluoridated water can predispose one to certain forms of cancer, such as osteosarcoma. There hasn't, to my knowledge, been any strong study that supported that. In fact, the National Cancer Institute actually examined the question in the 1990s and could find no relationship between fluoride and cancer. The third issue has to do with bone fractures and whether or not fluoridated water seems to predispose one to bone fractures. There seems to be no good study that's proven that relationship. And the last relationship seems to be connected to genetics and the potential for fluoride in the water causing some kind of a retardation or Down syndrome or some other genetic kinds of problems. Once again, when the science looked at this, they didn't find a strong relationship, if any, to support the notion. So the concerns from the group of the anti-fluoridationists, while they are very vocal and they can be very emotionally charged, they're a little bit lighter in the science department.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about fluoride in our toothpaste? Don't we get fluoride that way?
Absolutely, we do. And that's one of the reasons why they may be downgrading the fluoride recommendations in parts per million. There are two mechanisms of fluoride value in a tooth. One is that it's incorporated within the tooth structure itself during the development of the child and the development of the tooth. That's probably the strongest, most effective way of using fluoride. The second is for a surface exchange to occur, where fluoride is kind of adhered onto the tooth structure or exchanges with certain chemicals on the tooth enamel and makes the enamel somewhat stronger. That does happen. It doesn't happen to the same extent that incorporating it into the tooth structure entirely, but it is an effective mechanism. So there's fluoride in tooth structure, you know, in toothpaste. There's fluoride applications that are given in the dental offices. All this is designed to try to make the surface of the tooth enamel harder and less likely to be dissolved by mouth acids.
What happened to us when we didn't have any of this? Did we just lose our teeth?
Well, you know, if we go back 100 years, we certainly did lose our teeth.
Right.
You know, the incidence of decay and gum disease, which was much more prevalent, you know, 50 years ago, 25 years ago than it is today.
Right.
So we clearly lost our teeth, and the just the if one were to look at the data in connection to those people wearing dentures now versus those people wearing dentures 25, 50, 100 years ago, I mean, the numbers are staggering. Very low now, quite high then.
Interesting. Do you know why, and I'm wondering how their teeth are affected? I know that a lot of European countries don't fluoride their water, and I have family who live in Europe, and they take fluoride pills.
Well, that's right. They do two things in Europe, as far as I know. One is that they take fluoridated pills, and the second is that they actually fluoridate their salt.
Oh, their salt, right.
And so as a consequence of fluoridating their salt, they actually do get fluoride, but not through the same mechanism that we do, which is through the water.
Well, why don't we do our salt? Well, I wonder if there was a debate about that.
You know what? I don't know.
Huh. Interesting. And where does fluoride come from?
Well, it's a naturally occurring element. It's in the water system. It's in natural systems such as aquifers or wells. In varying degrees, Colorado has, for some reason, a lot of it. Some states have not so much of it. Certain regions within a state will have more or less. It's just a naturally occurring element within the ground, which becomes the groundwater.
And tell me, before we start going to phone calls, where does New Jersey stand on this now? Is the bill in the legislature? Is it being debated now?
I think it is being debated now, yes.
Okay. We're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking about water fluoridation because it's an interesting issue, and it's amazing how many municipalities around the country in the past few years have stopped fluoridating their water. We'll speak with a gentleman from a municipality, a town in Wisconsin, where they stopped fluoridating their water a little while ago. He's opposed to it. We'll talk about why. But it is something that's being done, and the figure is 75% of all water supplies in the United States do fluoridate their water. We're looking at why it remains controversial and whether or not the health benefits in terms of health for your teeth just outweigh any of the concerns, and whether some of the concerns are really just not scientifically valid. We'll have two guests with us during the course of this hour, and we're welcoming your calls at 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our guest this half hour is Dr. Robert Hirsch, past president of the New Jersey Dental Association and past president of the New Jersey Society of Periodontics. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, we're going to talk about books with Daniel Golden from Boswell Books, one of our favorite stores in Milwaukee, and it's one of our favorite subjects. The 9 o'clock hour tomorrow, Senator Russ Feingold will be our guest, and he'll be talking about his latest book and the future of America. All right, let's go to phone calls. Steve in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I'm very against fluoride in our water system. I'm not a scientist or anything, but I have to go off of, you know, what I've come across in conversation and things that I've heard. And you know, when I go to the dentist and I swish fluoride in my mouth, I don't swallow it. From what I've heard of fluoride, when we ingest it, has a much different effect from when it's just applied on our teeth. I think it's also very interesting that the first people to study that, from what I am aware, were the Nazis, and that they found that it actually helped control people and it actually helped keep people calmer. You know, if the government is so concerned about our health, they should be adding multivitamins to our water. Everybody has a vitamin, you know, a deficiency, and yeah, for some reason, fluoride's the big topic. And yeah, it occurs naturally, and I, you know, I think it is beneficial for our teeth, but for them to add it, I think it's very strange. And the last comment I have is that, isn't it, or a question isn't fluoride one of the main ingredients in rat poison?
Wait a second, Steve. You believe that the government, like the Nazis, did or trying to control the population through the use of fluoride? Is that your one of your concerns, really?
Well, no, I have heard that it actually keeps you, if people who ingest fluoride are actually tend to be calmer individuals.
So it's the government trying to make us calmer?
Yeah.
All right. Dr. Hirsch.
Well, I must tell you that in my reading in connection to fluoride and the effects of fluoride, I've never read or heard anyone say that it had a sedative effect. That's just what I know. I don't know that that's absolute fact, but I think that the if that were the case, somewhere along the way, I think that someone would have made that scientific observation, and perhaps it would have been in print. So I don't know that that's true. I don't have any knowledge at all in connection to what Nazi Germany did in connection to the use of fluoride as a strategy for calming the population as well.
Let's go to it's Susan in Elm Grove. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry, I had my speakerphone on. I was born in 1939 in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they were one of the first cities to have fluoride.
They were the first.
They were the first, yeah.
It was the first. Well, my dentist was very much in favor of it. It was wonderful. I have never had any problem with my teeth. My fillings were from chewing on popcorn kernels and ice, but nothing, no decay. My brother is the same way, and both of our parents had terrible teeth. My mother had dentures, and I think when she got dentures, I remember how painful that was. So I think fluoride is very preventative. I have heard, and this could be a rumor, that it is also good for bone health, but I don't know anything about that. Are you there?
Doctor?
Yes, of course. I don't know that the effect of fluoride on bone health is well documented. I think there's some evidence that may be the case, and I think that there was a time when they really believed that more strongly. I'm not sure that they really have that have made that association strong enough to be a solid piece of science right now.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Anne in Viroqua. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
Hi.
I live in a town that's recently been gentrified, and most of the people who have moved here, and it's a good addition to a certain extent, tend to be about a foot taller than the locals, and they have perfect teeth. They grew up in prosperous suburbs. I mean, this is a generalization, where they did have fluoridation, whereas in this town we did not have fluoridation, and all the locals, myself included, ended up with mouths full of mercury fillings, which are now, I'm 50, are starting to fall apart, and I just kind of find it ironic that the people who benefited from this are the ones who are now against it, that they didn't grow up like we did, with lesser health care, lesser money, and worse teeth.
Dr. Hirsch.
I don't know that I could add much to what she said. I think that if I understand what exactly her point was, the people that had the advantage of fluoride seem to have, I don't know that it has much to do with height, by the way, I mean, although maybe socioeconomically there was an issue. But the matter of having perfect teeth or really good teeth certainly would speak to someone who had perhaps the advantage of fluoride. Whether they did or they didn't, I don't know. We really don't know that. So, and they may have just had the ability to pay, for really good dental care when they were young. And so as a consequence, they had, very nice teeth and very straight teeth and had orthodontics and had good fillings and didn't let their teeth deteriorate too badly. And so it could have been that, and they could have been, grown up in towns without fluoride. We don't know that,
Right.
It's a little bit unsure what exactly that all means.
Do people in New Jersey take fluoride pills?
Yes, they do.
They do.
As a matter of fact, the town that I'm in and grew up in didn't have fluoride. But when we had our children, they were encouraged to take a polyvifluor or one of the fluoride supplements at a certain point from the pediatrician, because they felt that it was strongly advised. And so we did. I can say anecdotally that our kids don't have any decay, that's for sure.
Right. I guess I didn't realize, even in Wisconsin, you have to Google fluoride in Wisconsin. There are a lot of communities in this state that don't have fluoride in their water. If you're concerned and want fluoride, I guess you almost need to check to make sure that your community supplies it, right?
Sure. I think that's the first. Is there naturally occurring fluoride in your water that you don't, in your well water or in your system water that you don't know about? It's interesting, that there seems to be in some studies more recently that there is a recurrence or a resurgence of decay in some areas, and it seems to be connected to bottled water. That is, so many people now are drinking bottled water. Bottled water isn't necessarily fluoridated, and probably isn't in most cases.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they're actually, the people that have kind of shifted over to bottled water have actually wound up not getting fluoride in their water system.
Huh. Well, there wasn't a lot of hullabaloo about naturally occurring fluoride, was there? Are there communities trying to get that out of their supply through filters?
Well, I don't know that you can filter very easily. It's not so easy to filter. But certainly, I think it's important to know in your water system if there is fluoride and to what extent it is, what concentration it is. And then if you're going to supplement your children, for example, with fluoride, I think you have to know that they're not going to be given too much fluoride, because there is already one part per million, let's say, in the natural water system. So I think it's important to find out two things. One is your water naturally fluoridated, and two, is the is your town supplementing that or augmenting that or to bring it to the level that's accepted, which is somewhere between 0.7 and one part per million.
0.7, yeah. Thanks, Annie, for the call. We go to Paul in Richland Center. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I'm going to be the yin to the woman that just called in from Grand Rapids. I was born in 1954, grew up in a small, very small Wisconsin town drinking hard farm well water. Over the past 2.5 years, I have had 15 crowns done with two more to go, and then I practically have all my teeth re-crowned. Mm-hmm. Crowned. My dentist attributes it to the fact that I grew up without fluoride. Now, I know that, dental practices are a tad different, today than they were, but let's face it, I know a lot of people that don't have dental insurance, like I'm fortunate to have, to help pay for this enormous cost. And when times are tough, parents aren't taking their children to the dentist, and my own dentist will tell me that his business has dropped off until the pain is so bad they have to go. So, and dentists are becoming and are just as expensive as medical doctors. So I am all in favor of keeping fluoride in water, because I'm living proof, I think, of what growing up without fluoride created for me in later life, the enormous expense of having all of this dental work done. So that's my only comment.
And Paul, before you go, did your family think about getting fluoride pills? Was that discussed?
No, I never even knew there were fluoride pills.
Oh.
I didn't have any kind of fluoride pills, or I took goiter pills, of course, when I was in elementary school. But I never heard of fluoride pills until right now, actually. I never knew that such a thing existed. So no, and I tried to attribute it, because both my parents had terrible teeth, and I tried to attribute it to genetics, and my dentist has said there really isn't that much proof that dental, you know, issues are genetic, and it wasn't that I was taking bad care of my teeth, but, you know, the products were extremely limited back in my day in terms of, you know, dental products, but my earliest memory, and believe me, it still is scarred in my brain, is going to the dentist and having my teeth drilled on without Novocaine.
Ow!
Yeah. Ooh. And I, it wasn't that we didn't go to the dentist. I was always in the dentist, you know, with having, you know, this cavity and that cavity. And I wasn't a big sugar eater. And I grew up in a pretty strict, you know, dietary household. And so I agree that, you know, fluoride is absolutely essential, and for these communities, and I know there are communities probably in my own area that are taking fluoride out because they believe, you know, that we're getting it elsewhere, but I still go back to the idea that a lot of people don't have dental insurance,
right?
And dental work is extremely expensive.
All right, well, you make your point well, Dr. Hirsch.
Well, I think he does make the point very well. I don't know that the fluoride is the entire story. You know, I think that, to be fair, decay and dental problems are, you know, can be caused by, you know, home care has to be really good, and professional care at some interval, I think, is important. And I think that genetics does play a role in one's susceptibility to decay. I don't think that everyone is you know, equal in connection to the amount of enamel formation and how good it is and how bad it is. I even think that there's a certain period in utero when, you know, the formation can be interfered with by some interruption in nutrition or whatever. And so I think there are a lot of, you know, factors involved in the whole dental decay process that has to be weighed. But having said that, I think that, you know, Paul's point was quite well taken, that there seems to be very good evidence that fluoride is one piece that can be controlled and can have a very valuable effect.
Yeah. It seems to me as though we just need to evolve to have better teeth, too, don't we?
Well, that's a little different issue, you know?
Right, it is.
In order for, if one wants to follow Darwin's recommendation, then tooth decay has to be damaging enough to the to the individual to not propagate further. That doesn't happen.
No, it sure doesn't. So where do things stand in New Jersey? Is this going to pass or not?
Well, you know, we don't know. There are those who are, you know, very strongly opposed to it. And I think what happens, if I read the politics correctly, is when something like this becomes a political issue, politicians sometimes don't have the will to do what they really know is perhaps the better way, because they know that it has impact on their political future. So I think that, you know, it is political. It's not, I don't think it's entirely a scientific question at this point, but I think it's a political question, and I think that the politics sometimes outweighs the rational thought.
No. That must be the first time that's ever happened.
It's the first time I've ever said it.
Thank you very much for being with us. We'll follow what happens in New Jersey. It's an interesting story. Thanks.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Our guest, Dr. Robert Hirsch, the first part of the show, past president of the New Jersey Dental Association, past president of the New Jersey Society of Periodontics. And we talked about New Jersey because this is how the whole thing got rolling. It made us wonder about fluoridation because they're debating this in New Jersey. Most residents, as you heard him say, do not have fluoridated water, and there is a battle in the state legislature about a requirement for all public water systems to add fluoride to the water supply. Part of the reason is that some states have home rule. It means that every municipality can decide if it wants to participate in the public health initiatives, such as fluoridation. If six communities receive water from the same source, any one town can veto the initiative. It's fascinating. Well, here in Wisconsin, there are some communities that don't have fluoride in their water. You have to go. I just Googled yesterday and found that there were a number of communities, actually, that don't add fluoride to their water supply. Holman is one of those communities, and our guest the next hour was one of the people who led the drive in Holman to not put fluoride in the water. He's an elected village trustee from Holman, Wisconsin, and he says that the local public health people and dentists wanted to put fluoride in the water. They eventually got a hearing with the village board. The board thought about it. They decided they didn't want to be the ones to make the decision. In the 2008 election, there was a referendum that passed in favor of fluoride, and then the story goes on from there. So we will talk about what happened and what the story is in Holman, and welcome more of your phone calls. We have many of them this hour. If you'd like to join us, one line is open right now at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Hi, Tony. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Kathleen. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Tell me about the history here. In 2008, there was a referendum that passed in favor, but the people in Holman were pretty evenly split about whether or not they should proceed.
Yeah, it did pass, and then several years went by, and in 2011, the EPA revised its recommended level to 0.7, and I was already planning on running for the village board at that time because of my opposition to fluoride. And I took that, and a lot of people did as well, to be proof positive that many of the challenges and arguments that we've been making from the very beginning of this issue in the area had some real weight to it. And they all stem from a 2006 NAS study, National Academies of Science, which was commissioned by the EPA to look at fluoride. And that 2006 study was so concerning, apparently, although it did take 4 years for it to register with the EPA, that they eliminated the range, which was 0.7 to 1.2, and just said, you better go with 0.7. Now, if that does not tell you that the public health officials in our country believe people are getting too much fluoride, I don't know what would.
And if you went above that recommendation, what happened? Did they say there would be health consequences?
Well, I think, to go back to the NAS study, which 2006, you can get it online. It's produced by the NAS itself, mm-hmm. very reputable organization. It's really interesting to read. They go through all these different categories of problems that fluoride intake might cause, especially too much of it, from the reproductive systems to the skeletal systems to the thyroid, things like that. And they go through all of the evidence, and then they get to the end, and basically the conclusion is the same in all of them. I'm going to sum it up and translate it for you.
Okay.
Holy crap, we don't know what this is all doing to us. You know, basically, they all say, we need more research on this. This is disturbing. We need to look at this more seriously. Mm-hmm. That was the conclusion to almost every section of that 2006 study. So, I'm not going to go on record here saying definitively, you know, too much fluoride will have this effect or that effect, especially because it's not so much what you might call acute toxicity that we're worried about. We're not worried about someone all of a sudden overdosing on, you know, a lot of fluoride so much that it makes them sick. The question is, what does the long-term intake of fluoride do to somebody? And that is much more difficult to measure. And it's a little disturbing to me that we did not have those answers firmly in hand before we launched this initiative in this country back in the 60s and 70s. It should not take until 2011 for the EPA to say, yeah, we better go with 0.7.
Mm-hmm. And so in the meantime, we should not put any fluoride in the water. Tell me about what happened in Holman. You don't fluoridate your water at all now, do you?
That's correct. I was elected along with some others, and shortly after they began fluoridating, we voted to stop it. So as it sits right now, It is not being fluoridated here in Holman.
And you were elected to the board primarily and others on this issue?
Well, a lot of it has to do with who shows up. I ran for the office. And, just the way it was, there weren't any challengers. So, I won. If you feel strongly about an issue and you want to be involved in making the decisions, then you have to step up and become a decision maker if it means that much to you.
Yeah.
And it did to me. And that's just kind of the way things happen in that regards. But, the real issue, your question is, well, what does, does this mean that I think the water should not have the fluoride? Well, that goes to one of my guiding principles, which is that if you think that fluoride is a useful thing for you, a beneficial thing for you, then you individually can make that choice. In your previous segment, you had a gentleman who was a big supporter of fluoride who did not know, after all these years, that there were fluoride pills available. Well, that seems kind of strange to me, but there are fluoride pills available. You can get them pretty affordably, $40 or $50 a year. And if you want to exercise that option, you have that option available to you. To go the next step and say, well, we think it's beneficial for everyone, and we're just going to do it by adding it to the water, that, to me, is a bridge too far. That's over the line.
And yet, you cited the NAS study. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have called fluoridation of water supplies one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century.
Well, that was the CDC that said that.
Right.
Yeah, the NAS study was commissioned by the EPA. Yeah, I mean, from a public health perspective, regarding things from the perspective of an official who is tasked with this, I can see how they might think that way. But that really goes up to one of the fundamental questions that we need to ask. To what degree do we want unelected government officials, no matter how well-meaning they are, to make decisions for people's health for them in such a massive scale? And if we really did not want to... If we are really concerned about using the public water supply in this way, one of your previous callers indicated, well, why not add other things? Well, no one's really talking about those other things, but there's really no reason why we couldn't. I believe in Europe they also fluoridate their milk, for example, along with the salt. So it comes down to a question of, to what degree do we want to give public health officials this ability to sort of decide based on their own judgment what's going to be good for the rest of us? And I'm very uncomfortable with that, and a lot of people are. And in fact, a lot of people are across the board. We're having a raw milk debate here in Wisconsin.
Right.
Probably aware. And, it's all part of the same fabric.
Well, what about vaccinations? Do you think that we should require vaccinations for children to go to school?
Well, there again, we have exemptions, right? So we do allow people to opt out of it in that scenario. And there's no one who currently goes around making sure that everybody is vaccinated. So there are options for people who don't want to participate in that particular program. The problem with community water fluoridation is, especially when it's adopted at a massive scale, say nationally, I mean, there's practically no escape from it. Everywhere you go, there's fluoride in your water. And one of the problems with it, say, well, why don't you just exercise your option to filter it out? Well, taking fluoride out of your water is no easy task. You need special filters, reverse osmosis, distillation, things like that. And to do that is above and beyond the kind of filter that you can get from Walmart. We're talking in the order of $500 a year. I've heard systems costing up to $2,000 a year. And you can tell just from looking at those two numbers, thousands of dollars a year versus $40 to $60 for fluoride pills, where's the equity in that kind of judgment? There will always be people who determine that they don't think that fluoride is proper in their family, for their personal health, whatever it is. And they will be forced to make the judgment to spend this kind of money. It's kind of interesting, the argument to help the poor people who cannot afford dental insurance or whatever actually kind of cuts another direction in this. Because if a person who can't afford toothpaste for $20 a year maybe, or fluoride pills for 40 or 50, if he decides he can't have fluoride in his water for whatever reason, he's one of the subpopulations that's affected by fluoride, well, he's not going to be able to afford the $500 to $1,000 to take it out either. These are the kinds of unintended consequences that are just best left alone by not taking this particular kind of measure.
What about the fluoride that just occurs naturally, as our previous guest said? It occurs naturally in quite a few water supplies. Is that of concern to you because of potential health problems?
Well, I'm very glad that you asked that, because in point of fact, the fluoride that we find in the dirt is calcium fluoride, and that is a different substance, a different compound altogether from the kind of fluoride that we're talking about. Most of the tests, most of the science, if you go looking, and even if you're not a scientist, you're allowed to go research and think for yourself, they're done on the pharmaceutical-grade sodium fluoride. And that's still not what gets put into our water supply, because the pharmaceutical-grade stuff is kind of expensive, very expensive, in fact. What we use is called, and what we would have used here in Holman, is hydrofluosilic acid, or I believe it's also called hexafluosilic acid. And it's basically a fluoridic substance that is taken out of the factories of our phosphate fertilizers, it's scraped out of the stacks, and then sold to the American people, to the municipalities. So back to the question about, well, what about the calcium fluoride that we have in our water supply? I mean, it's a known fact that too much of that is going to pose a problem, and the EPA does have maximum limits. I believe it's 4 milligrams for their MCL. That's the maximum level that they'll allow water supply to have, and they prefer people to aim for 2. That's their secondary goal on that. So it's not like we're oblivious to the concern about the calcium fluoride as well. It's something we have to take seriously, but it's not the same substance that we're deliberately adding to our water supply, which is basically the product of a kind of a messy chemical factory. I don't know how to put it nicely. You know, it's just not pretty where this stuff comes from.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily for our guest. We're talking about fluoride, our attention to this topic, because there is a battle in New Jersey over a bill that would require all public water systems to add fluoride. And it's widely used in most municipalities, but there also has been a movement, particularly over the last 4 years, to stop fluoridating water supplies, as was the case in Holman, Wisconsin. And we're talking with a gentleman who led that debate in the state of Wisconsin and has become a village trustee. Tony Horvath is our guest, and you have heard him explain why he was concerned about fluoride in the water. And so we've learned about the history of Holman, Wisconsin's dealing with the issue of fluoridation, and we'll be welcoming your phone calls as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just a few notes for you. WHAD is having its Dinner for Listeners. Milwaukee staff and keynote speaker Larry Mueller with gardening expert Melinda Myers will be at Milwaukee's Mitchell Park Domes. They're beautiful. It's Thursday, April 5, 6 o'clock. Doors open. People arrive. Go to the jungle. Go to the desert. Look at beautiful flowers. Have dinner and have a program. And the tickets are $40. The deadline to register is today, which is why I'm telling you about this right now. For more information and to reserve tickets, visit WPR.org/Milwaukee. That's WPR.org/Milwaukee. Phone calls now. Jean in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi. Well, thank you so much for working for your subpopulations. I lived in Chippewa Falls, and we fought fluoride being put into our water. In fact, it's called, you know, hydrofluorosilicic acid. We did a lot of research on it, spoke with scientists. scientists from the EPA. And there have been no studies, significant studies, of the positive nor negative impacts of fluoride on the body because of difficulties finding populations that have never had fluoride exposure. In addition, I love that you address the fact that you can put it in easily, but you can't get it out. And there's so many subpopulations. You know, people are being treated for cancer, people with immune system difficulties, people who have problems with their kidneys. And so in Chippewa, the population of Chippewa were educated, and they voted 75% in a non-binding question that they did not want fluoride in their water. And I think it's wonderful what you're doing because there's so many other ways that one can get fluoride for their teeth rather than putting it in the entire water system.
There are, if you say, though, that there are no scientific studies that show it's either helpful or harmful, why are you citing all those problems?
Okay, well, I mean specifically that it is safe. There have been studies that have linked from Canada, and you'll have to pardon me because this has been, we defeated it in about 2004, 2005, and it came up again, and the people said, no way. And I have boxes of research, and I'm sorry that I don't have it handy. There was even a government agency that, you know, recommended that the subpopulations, you know, totally avoid fluoride. But there were studies done on, I think it was boys. You may be able to help me with this, with cancer.
All right. I don't think there are a lot of, there are a lot of reputable studies in this area, or we certainly would have heard about them. Our guest before indicated this simply was not the case. There may be concern about the level of fluoride in the water, but to link it strongly with cancer, et cetera, I don't think there's scientific proof of that, is there?
May I interject?
Yeah, sure. I'm asking you.
Oh, okay, great. Well, the previous guest repeatedly said there's no good studies, which really begs the question as to who is making that determination. And you will find scientists on all sides of this issue, and you can find scientists who say that the very same not good studies are actually quite good. And I believe the study in question linking fluoride consumption to bone cancer for young adults is the BASSIN study, BASSIN, which was in 2006, which was after, I believe, I might be wrong on the sequence, the 2006 NAS study I've been referring to. So there is concern about that. And I think what tends to happen is not that people get frightened away from this topic, but that when they say to themselves, hey, I need to be in charge of my own health. I need to know what antibiotics are going into my body, what health procedures I'm going to do. Well, what about this fluoride stuff? They begin doing research. And then their estimate of what constitutes not a good study is different. And all they do is reserve the right to make that decision for their own families. And I think that's the appropriate place for that decision to be made.
Thanks, Jean, very much for the call. Let's go to Rosella in Fort Atkinson. Hi.
Hi. I just have to tell you that my daughter will be 55 in July, and she has yet to have a filling in her mouth. Now, she grew up in the Minneapolis area where I'm sure they had fluoride in the water, and our dentist at the time had some connection with the University of Minnesota. And anyway, she also had fluoride treatments that were given her. She's always been very healthy. She still is very healthy. And I might have to add here that her father and I I grew up at a time when probably they didn't even know what fluoride was. And anyway, we have had fillings in practically every tooth in our mouth. And so anyway, I tend to feel that she certainly benefited from the fluoride.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. A lot of this concern was started, and I wonder if you disassociate yourself from the John Birch Society, but I'm old enough to remember when the Society opposed water fluoridation, seeing it as a communist plot to poison Americans.
It's not really, those types of conspiracies are not really relevant to the question at hand, which is simply whether or not an area should make a health decision for everybody else in the citizenry. And there are subpopulations which need to be informed that they are at risk potentially. I don't want to sound like a scare tactic, but the elderly, young newborns who exclusively use fluoridated water for their formula, but also, surprisingly, athletes who consume a lot more water. And these are perfectly healthy people, but because they consume so much more water than the rest of the population, they unknowingly put themselves at risk of some of these higher accumulations over their lifetimes.
Thank you, Tony, so much for being with us. I feel like we just got started on this issue. Tony Horvath from Holman, Wisconsin, village trustee, and he ran on the issue of let's get rid of fluoride, and indeed that happened in that community. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster for producing this interesting hour, and thanks to Katie Madsen as well for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Senator Russ Feingold, first hour of our show tomorrow. Thanks for listening.